And now, The Low Post.
Welcome to The Low Post Podcast, where it is a big, big day for our beloved guest here on multiple levels. The Boston Celtics absolutely destroyed the Cleveland Cavaliers in game one of the eagerly anticipated Eastern Conference Finals. And sports gambling is legal. Bill Simmons, how you doing?
Wow. You really catching me on a celebration day, Zach. I don't know what to say. That yesterday, today, and what else can happen this week? It's two of the best days ever.
Well, what else can happen is the Celtics could go up 2-0.
It's conceivable. I really did feel like they had a chance to win this series. And, you know, you look at, like, look, even right now, the Cavs are still favored in the series heading into game two. And the shadow of LeBron has just thrown this whole thing in askew. And it really doesn't make sense if you actually watch the team. Like, I was actually proud of Van Gundy yesterday during the game to be like, the Celtics are better. You know, if the Cavs win this series, it'll be because of LeBron, which we all know. But this is really the ultimate LeBron has to win this series by himself. He hasn't been in this position in really since the 2015 finals when Kyrie went down. And there's no rookie wall anymore. You know, like Tatum hit the rookie wall and when, like December, January. But now there's no rookie wall because the excitement of these crowds and the intensity and the spotlight, like everyone's just running at full speed. And man, you watch yesterday and there's not a lot of options for the Cavs. Like, what would you do? They obviously have to go bigger, right? But what else can you really do?
Yeah, I think the most important strategic question for them is, do you start Tristan Thompson?
You have to.
I don't think they will in game two. I don't think they're going to be ready yet. I think they're going to say we left enough, not low-hanging fruit, but like mid-hanging fruit on the table with our offense in game one, and we could talk about what some of that is, that we're not ready to sort of dramatically change our strategy. But I do think, first of all, LeBron-Thompson-Love has been a successful pairing for them all playoffs long. I think they're like, let's see, I have it here. They're plus 12 in just 48 minutes. Both been really good on both ends of the floor. And you can do things like put Tristan on Al Horford. If the Celtics don't change their starting lineup, you can put Tristan on Al Horford and Kevin Love on Marcus Morris. You'll be fine. You got to arrange the other matchups a little differently. And if the Celtics say we're so afraid of Tristan Thompson and Al Horford's been having nightmares about Tristan Thompson for like five straight years now, we'll start Baines. And maybe that's a net win for you too, because now the Celtics have to sort of rework their offense. And Baines Horford was really good in the regular season. I can hear the Celtics fans citing me the numbers. In the playoffs, Baines Horford has been bad. They're minus 16 in 128 minutes, 103 offensive rating, 108 defensive rating. And a lot of why they were good in the regular season is, I think, because Kyrie was playing a lot with them. So that, I mean, that's the obvious one, right? I mean, we can talk about some of the other stuff they can do, like not be completely clueless whenever Al Horford sets a screen, not having Jordan Clarkson decide that it's a good idea to shoot literally every time he touches the ball, even if LeBron is posting up a smaller guy or Kevin Love is posting up a smaller guy. We can talk about that stuff, but that's the big one, right?
Well, first of all, it's Jordan Crawford, not Jordan Clarkson.
That was awesome. That was awesome.
That really, to me, seemed like intentional. I believe everything LeBron does, every time he's discussing a teammate, is intentional, and that felt intentional to me. First of all, you mentioned some offensive rating and the plus. I don't deal with the small sample size. I'm out. In 2018, I'm out on small sample size numbers. The Horford-Baines thing, I actually think is effective against certain teams. Against the Sixers, you know, Embiid was out there. That's probably why the numbers weren't fantastic. And they had to play Baines probably more minutes than they had to. I'm of the opinion that the Celtics, Morris is not a LeBron stopper, but not afraid of him. He's the same size. LeBron's not going to run him over, you know, and you need him starting. You need him to kind of lay it down a little bit. But then they have all these dudes. There was this great montage in the game yesterday when they showed all the different guys that the Celtics had who could guard LeBron. And I'm not saying they could stop him, but they could at least make him work a little bit. And it was like seven guys. Do you remember that montage? Whereas like Toronto, other than OG and you know, not really even Pascal Siakam. Like, Toronto had nobody. LeBron did whatever he wanted in that series, and this is the opposite. So if you're going to make the case that they can beat the Cavs. I really think it starts there. LeBron's going to be able to do what he can do, but he's not going to have his way. And he's really going to have to dig to a special, special place. He did it against Indiana. But then look at that Indiana team. They weren't nearly as good enough defensively as the Celtics are. They didn't have nearly as good of a coach, and they didn't have home court. And they still made them sweat. And they still had to dig deep in game four. They had to dig deep in game five, and they had to dig pretty deep in game seven, too.
LeBron had to, like, post up six times in a row and get to the rim to, like, save their season.
Right. And this Boston team's better than Indiana. And they have... You know, that Indiana team was so reliant on Oladipo, who did not have a good series and, you know, had a couple good games, but for the most part really let them down. And especially for me, the key game was game four. You and I haven't talked about this on a podcast, but I did feel like LeBron was teetering in that game. We've seen him do it. I mentioned this to David Griffin last week, and he actually agreed. We've seen him in 2010. We saw it happen in game four and game five in 2014, where when the LeBron computer, which we saw yesterday at the press conference, where he just remembered every single play for three straight minutes. But sometimes the LeBron computer can sense that he doesn't have a winning hand, and he can't help it. He doesn't check out. It's not like he stops trying, but you can just see it's not, something's off. And I felt like in Indiana game four, you could see it.
Yeah, you mentioned game four. I mean, game three, the one they lost was, I mean, I remember texting some coaches and people around the league saying, this is one of the weirdest games I've ever seen. Like, he just stopped playing. Yeah. That was the game where he would give up the ball, stand at half court, and basically say, you guys go do it. Figure out Jordan Clarkson. You want to shoot, buddy?
Right.
Dribble into paint and throw up your trash, because I'm not coming back to save you.
Well, remember game five, 2014, the finals? That when San Antonio won in Miami, that happened in the second half of that game. And I was there. I was watching right there, and Jalen and I were talking about it the whole half. It was like he was throwing these really angry, hard passes at his teammates. He was just whipping chest passes and be like, all right, you guys, screw you guys. You guys put us in this spot. Go ahead. Take us home, kids. And that was like his attitude. And it felt like he was heading there. Yesterday, just a tiny bit, especially when Clarkson had his misguided heat check. But that's the thing. It's like, you know, Rodney Hood, Clarkson, Nance, who's not even playing. These guys have never been in big games, and I'm not even really sure if they should be rotation guys on a title team. For me, it's like, what, six guys on the Cavs that you trust at this point? Maybe seven, six?
I remember Clarkson in like their first or second game after the trades, I believe it was against Oklahoma City, scored like 19 points or something. It was hitting all his Jordan Clarkson shots.
Yeah.
And if I were you, I would have tweeted it. I don't have as much online courage as you do. I was just gonna tweet, dear Cleveland fans, it's just not always going to be like this. Like, this is not really what happens with Jordan Clarkson. I think I even said it on a podcast a couple of days later, but like, this is Jordan Clarkson. He's not good. Like, he's just not good.
Those trades and the celebrations afterwards and the victory laps that people took, I was just confused by it, because I feel like I watch basketball and it's like, all right, you have Jordan Clarkson. It's the heat check guy who maybe in a playoff series can win one game for you. I thought Nance was going to be good for them. I don't know what happened.
They made the trades for Nance. I mean, other than the George Hill thing, which is a separate deal. We'll talk about George Hill in a second. He's a very important player for them now. But they made the other trades for Nance.
The George Hill thing, though, it's like, what are you getting? You know, is he's stayed healthy now for eight playoff games. And that's the rub with him. Can you get through 10 playoff weeks with George Hill? I think they've made a real mistake with Nance, because especially in the home games that they have, I think they need his energy and his ability to play above the rim. It's the type of guy that's given this Celtics team trouble, you know, where if you're just going to, like, if you're going to play Jordan Clarkson, the one thing the Celtics have learned how to do really well during the course of the playoffs, which I don't really remember them doing as well in the regular season, is torching the kind of defensive liability guy. They went starting. I thought Stevens, I went to game five of the Philly series.
You went to game four as well. We're going to talk about we're going to talk about your behavior at game four. I'm very disappointed in you.
All right, I'll finish my point, and then you can. I didn't know what I did with my behavior, but so they bring out the little guys, the shooters, and it worked. Redick, Bellinelli, McConnell, and it just kind of threw the Celtics off. And then there's this two-day stretch, and it's like, I wonder what he has in store for that. And then you go to game five, and it's like, oh, he's just going to torture these guys. It's like, oh, you're going to have Redick out there? All right, we're posting him up every time. We're going to post up Bellinelli, like whoever. We're putting him in the torture chamber. And these guys, like, you know, Jalen and Tatum and, like, these guys couldn't have done this 4 months ago. They wouldn't have been as sophisticated enough offensively to be like, all right, I got you. And then Tatum's down there and he's doing his thing. And now they know how to do that. So if Jordan Clarkson's going to play in this series, he's going in the torture chamber. That's just the way it is.
Well, they don't have anywhere to, I mean, this was obvious before the series. They don't have anywhere to hide Korver. The Boston doesn't offer you any hiding spots. And I think one of the lessons of these playoffs, and it's certainly not the first, but it's been thrown into, for me, starkest relief is like, you got to be able to play. I mean, we've always known you got to be able to play lots of different styles to get through four playoff rounds. And usually people mean, you know, you got to be able to play big and you got to be able to play small. I think you've got to be able to play, a sort of a flowing offense. And then when you face a team that switches a lot of stuff and can take that away, you got to be able to play one on one, whether it's post, whether it's just face up Jaylen Brown and, you know, bully ball drive to the rim against Korver and hit a leaner. Like, you got to be able to have that in your bag. And the Celtics, they play lineups where, like, they can play five guys who can post, like, at the same time. Like, Smart can post. Jalen Brown can post. Tatum can post. Horford, Marcus Morris. By the way, that's a lineup they've only played, like, 8 minutes the entire season, the one I just said. Smart, Brown, Tatum, Morris, Horford. That's a legitimate 1 through 5 you can switch on defense. I was thinking about that in game one because they played, like, four of those guys at once, but Baines would be on the floor. Or Rozier would be on the floor, and those are the ones they couldn't switch. You play Smart and Horford at 1 and 5 and those three big wings in between, you can literally switch 1 to 5. I mean, I kind of would like to see that in this series because that's the way the Cavs are going to attack, and I think that's the low-hanging fruit they left on the table is you got to find Rozier and put him in pick and rolls with Bron. Have, if he's guarding George Hill, they had great success running George Hill, Kevin Love pick and rolls. And if you switch, you're in trouble. And if you don't switch, you're in trouble with Rozier. And like, that's one antidote to that is just for 8 minutes, play a lineup that literally not like, oh, they can kind of do it. And there's one guy who's going to be in trouble that can literally switch 1 to 5. It's incredible.
Well, and then the post ups on the other end, that is probably their best lineup for this series where when Smart's in there instead of Rozier. And Rozier's been really admirably good in this playoffs.
Crazy
and I just never saw this coming. I did think there was a chance that he was one of those. Some guys just aren't meant to come off the bench. Some guys need the feel of the game in the 35 minutes. And he had, you know, legitimate translatable NBA skills as a starter. Like, he's a great rebounder in traffic. He's a good athlete. He works hard. And he's a good 3-point shooter and he's pretty good, like in the lane. He makes good decisions on the fast break for the most part. But what he's done in the last 10 weeks, I did not see coming. But that lineup you mentioned,
it doesn't play. Like, I don't know if we'll ever see it. I just was watching the game intrigued by the theoretical possibility of it. It's kind of like when Curry gets hurt. And the Warriors played the death lineup, except it's Livingston instead of Curry. And they can go, it's like, what are you supposed to do? Like, you can't do anything.
I think the weirdest, even weirder than the Rozier last 10 weeks, has been the Smart post-ups. And I don't know what the stats are. It's something he's always done, and it's been kind of hit or miss. And when he does it, you kind of like it because he can pass out of it and he can do some stuff. But he's been lights out in the low post. It's actually gotten to the point where when they give it to him down there, I think the Celtics are going to score. And but you mentioned the switching. I was watching, you know, it was Mother's Day yesterday.
Yeah.
You're a better person than I am, as America already knew. But
my wife listens to this podcast. She's going to be like, yeah, not to TBD on that.
Yeah, just remind your wife next time she wants to go out to a nice dinner. This is what earns the bucks when you're watching these Cavs Celtics games. Just give her a little general reminder. But you waited. You spent Mother's Day, and then you watched the game on delay after.
Yes.
I am not as good of a person as you. I watched the game with my mom and my wife, and they were actually kind of into it. But I was explaining to them the switching, and I was like, this is something that, you know, teams – It's not like this is the newest strategy of all time, but it does seem like teams have perfected it. And, you know, Kevin O'Connor wrote a piece for The Ringer today about this little wrinkle that Stevens added that I feel like I've watched a ton of basketball in my life, and I've never seen a team do this as successfully as the Celtics did yesterday, where they'd let the Cavs do that switch, and then smaller guy on the bigger guy in the low post or whoever was going. And then they would do this switcheroo, and the Cavs would always take like 4 seconds to kind of, oh, we got the switch we wanted. Okay, now what do we do? And as they're figuring that out, the Celtics are just switching guys, and all of a sudden they don't have the mismatch anymore. And I couldn't believe the announcers didn't mention it, because it was like I had never seen the Celtics do that before. Maybe they have, but I'd never seen them do it as consistently.
They did it a couple times against Philly. I wrote about it.
A couple times.
Yeah, the scram. Coaches call it the scram or the kick out, where someone comes and yanks you out of the mismatch. And the Rockets are really good when CP gets switched onto a center. PJ Tucker will run in and drag him out of it. They're probably the best in the league at it.
It was really effective. And the biggest takeaway for me watching how well they were doing just on defense with the switches and everything is just the chemistry of the dudes on defense now is high, high, high level. No matter whatever 7 or 8 guys are in, it's almost like watching a zone defense in football, like a secondary. Like if they're playing like 6 defensive backs and everybody kind of knows what to do, no matter what the receivers are doing, it's like, oh, they're running a pick play. Okay, you go there, I go here. And they make the same move every time. And I think the shocker of it is Tatum. Who, by the way, made the 2 biggest mistakes of the playoffs for them so far, but on the Bellinelli 3 and on the game 2, the long Middleton 3 where he didn't switch. So it's not like he's perfect, but, remember when he came out of college, people were worried about his D, and that was a big thing. Like, yeah, he's a scorer. He's a good athlete, a lot of potential there, but I don't think anybody saw the potential of what he's doing defensively.
Hey, male listeners. You cannot buy an off-the-rack suit. Once you're over 35, it should be illegal to buy an off-the-rack suit. It just doesn't look as good as a made-to-measure suit. When I got married, I got my first ever made-to-measure suit, and it turned out my body was all screwed up. One of my arms is longer than the other one. My shoulders are too broad for my waist, the blah, blah, blah. They had to like get all the best staff on to measure me a suit. And guess what? It looks way better than any other off-the-rack suit. And it can be time-consuming, and it can be a little bit troubling, but it's worth it. And Indochino is here to make it easier for you. Indochino is the world's largest made-to-measure menswear company. It's been featured all over the place. GQ, Forbes, Fast Company. They make suits and shirts, by the way. Underrated, a good shirt. They've got a million fabrics. You can personalize every detail of your suit, the lapel, the lining, put in a monogram. And if you want, you can do it all online. To save time, you don't have to go anywhere, go through the whole process. Just submit your measurements, choose your customizations, pick your fabric, and something then arrives in the mail, a made-to-measure suit. You can also go to a showroom, which they have if you want a more personal touch or you think you need one for whatever reason. And this week, my listeners can get any premium Indochino suit for just $379 at Indochino.com. All you have to do is enter the promo code LOW, L-O-W-E, my last name, the name of this podcast, at checkout. That's 50% off the regular price for a made-to-measure premium suit. You can pay like thousands of dollars for a made-to-measure suit. $379 is nothing. Shipping is free. Indochino.com, promo code LOW, L-O-W-E. You get one for $379. Jason Tatum is just, it's insane how good he is. It's absolutely insane.
Yeah.
Like, no rookie should be this good in the playoffs. It shouldn't be possible. And think about everything that went into that trade. Okay. The Celtics would have taken Tatum number one.
Yes.
Would have. Okay.
Nobody believes that part, but
they would have. They would have taken Tatum number one.
They'd had it.
So if you're Philly, if you don't do that trade, you're still getting Fultz. Probably.
Yeah. Yes.
So because the Lakers are probably going to take Lonzo at 2. So you do nothing, you get Fultz. So Boston, to pull that trade off, has to, number one, convince Philly there's a chance that they or the Lakers will take Fultz. Number two, be sure that the Lakers are taking Ball and that the Sixers are taking Fultz. And then fleece them to get this extra pick, which could be literally the number two pick in the draft next year from the Kings. Like, the Sixers maybe end up getting Fultz either way. So Fultz Tatum is not the exchange that was made for Philly. It's really about the extra asset, and we have to see where that asset lands before we sort of finally evaluate the trade. But you realize the Celtics have four picks next year? They could have four picks. They could have the Kings pick. They have what I believe is a top eight Memphis pick. So if Memphis gets healthy and they get a high draft pick, like maybe they make the playoffs or just barely miss the playoffs, they could get like the 11th pick. They have a lottery protected Clippers pick. Clippers could absolutely be the eighth seed in the West next year, and then they have their own pick. They could have four picks in next year's draft. It's absolutely obscene. What's happening in Boston? It's just ridiculous. And Tatum is amazing, and Fultz is Fultz. Fultz around. I don't even know how to say it anymore. Guy didn't even play. It's Tatum, just ridiculous.
I was born in 1969, and I can remember bits and pieces of every Celtics season since 1974, and we had season tickets, and I was there when they got Bird. He is the best rookie they've had since Larry Bird, and it's not even close. I was there for Paul Pierce's rookie year. He'd been in college for 3 years. Came in, it was the lottery, it was the strike season, lockout season, whatever. It was a 50-gamer, Patino. And he definitely had a shitload of potential. Oh, sorry, I swear.
No, it's okay. We have beep okay, technology good. Here.
Great. And you could see he had a ton of potential. And he seemed a little out of shape. He was a little heavy. But clearly he could shoot threes and he could post up and things like that. Tatum has a chance to be the MVP. I never felt that way watching Pierce when he was a rookie. I was never like, we have a future MVP in our team. I think Tatum, if you're doing the who could be the MVP in the next 12 years draft, obviously Davis and Giannis would be the top two picks. And I think Ben Simmons is up there. Embiid, maybe if he could stay healthy for an entire year. But I think Tatum is on whatever list that is. He's that good. And the stuff he was doing in that Sixers series, I tweeted yesterday. I really genuinely believe this. I think Stevens kept him in the garage yesterday because I think he knew that with the defense they were going to play, I think he knew he was going to be able to stun the Cavs and win that game. And Tatum could get any shot he wanted in that game. And in game two, I think they take him out of the garage.
The step back three he hit over Tristan Thompson when the game got out of hand in the fourth quarter last night.
The arrogance of it.
I just started laughing. Like, what is he, Steph Curry all of a sudden? It's a Steph Curry shot. It's obscene.
Hold on. One other thing on Tatum. He's not even shooting threes that well in the playoffs. He's scoring all his points, but this is a guy who the first 2 months of the season was shooting 50% from three, I think, and he finished over 40 and is a guy that it's surprising when he misses a three. It just seems like all of them are going to go in. I think he was shooting 31% from three heading into this series. So he really hasn't had kind of that heat check from three yet, but the game is so easy for him. And if you talk to people around the Celtics, the other players like rave about Tatum. You know, when you can pick up, you know this better than anybody. When you talk to people around a team and you can pick up little tidbits and sometimes you know what's BS and sometimes you kind of know what's genuine. And the one thing I've learned to take seriously is when you hear the other guys kind of going out of their way to rave about somebody, just being like, you don't understand what this guy can do. You don't understand how good he is. And I had a friend who was talking to Morris and Greg Monroe and a couple others just about Tatum. And they were like, this guy's unbelievable. The stuff he's doing in practice is like, we just can't believe how good this guy is. And you're starting to see it now in the playoffs every single game. And I don't know what his ceiling is. I really don't.
People, like I wrote a column about Boston last week about how tough they are and how connected they are on defense. And we can talk about that later. And you get this groundswell every time. I'm like, oh, another a Boston story. I actually haven't written comparatively that much about Boston. But I'm like, okay, so what Boston story would you like me to write? Would you like me to write the story about how the Danny Ainge's rebuild has been just blah kind of a crappy rebuild, or would you like me to write the story about how Jason Tatum's not that good, or Brad Stevens isn't that good of a coach? Like, the people who are sick of fawning a positive Boston Celtics coverage, what story would you like me to write? It's absolutely ridiculous. This is the greatest rebuild maybe in the history of professional sports. If they are 3 wins away from the finals with $50 million of salary sitting on the bench, and they could have 4 picks, including the number 2 pick in next year's draft. I don't know what else you would like me to say about the job that Danny Ainge and Brad Stevens has done, because it is just objectively ridiculous. And if you would like me to say they took advantage of a GM and Billy King and an owner in Mikhail Prokhorov who were desperate and stupid and over-leveraged to try and win a championship, yeah, you know what? Guess how many teams took advantage of it? One. One team figured it out. Now, maybe that team had the exact right personnel, but blah, blah, blah. You can go through every team that has missed opportunities like that, that were sitting in front of their faces, including the Charlotte Hornets, who turned down all the picks for Justice Winslow from Danny Ainge. So Danny Ainge is lucky in that sense, but I don't know what other story you would like me to tell, because what's happening in Boston is special, and it's almost like absurd.
Well, they caught some breaks. You mentioned like break number one. The trade was a fair, at the time, Brooklyn, we thought, was going to contend for the rest of that decade, and even getting unprotected picks from them and the pick swap that turned into Tatum and stuff like that. It just seemed like the Celtics were always going to have a worse record than the Nets for the rest of the thing. I think the key break with that was a year after that season when it didn't, the first Pierce KG season, it didn't work out for the Nets. They didn't make the finals. And then Prokhorov basically switched tactics and decided, he was like, I'm not paying the luxury tax anymore, and kind of screwed them over a little bit. And that really allowed a lot of the Celtics stuff to fall, you know, the picks and stuff to fall into their laps. So that was break number one. Break number two was that Tatum Fultz trade, and Philly, for whatever reason, just deciding to really go for it. Like, this is like our team, these three guys, instead of kind of playing the long game like Hinkie played, you know? Because if you watch Tatum now, he's actually the perfect third guy for that Philly team. They didn't really have a closer. Look at all the times they would struggle in the last 2 minutes of a game. You know, they just couldn't, they didn't have that one guy who could basically create his own shot. And that would have been Tatum. And God, I mean, holy shit, if they had taken Tatum, and you put them with Embiid and Simmons,
it's a lot to think about.
That's the most frightening thing ever. But then, you know, the third thing for the Celts is the way they were able to structure the salaries and how much thought and care they put into that with, oh, this year we'll try to get the Horford or Durant type of free agent. And then the next year we'll have money for this Hayward thing. And then we know we have Tatum coming and Jaylen Brown down the road, and figuring out this Kyrie max extension, all this stuff, and then having these other picks. If you had to bet your life on it, do you think Kyrie is a Celtic in 2 years?
Well, you just anticipated my question for you, which is you are the Celtics fan. You are the president of all Celtics fans, the czar of all Celtics
fans.
Thank you.
I appreciate that.
I don't really think there's a point in pitching counterfactuals, like, you know, what if they didn't sign Hayward? What if they didn't get Kyrie? Because they're just the number of, then what happens to Crowder, Olynyk, Marcus Morris? There's just too many variables. Is there any part of you that thinks, do we need Kyrie Irving and or Gordon Hayward? Like, imagine if it were possible to just wipe away their salary and you have this team. Maybe plus a Crowder, minus a Morris, whatever. This team plus max cap room, plus all these picks. I mean, is that better than what they have now? Do they? This is a silly question because they're going to be absolutely ridiculous next year when they get all these guys back. But it's less silly in a couple of years when Jaylen Brown gets the max or whatever he gets, and Kyrie gets a new max, and Horford gets something, and Hayward gets a new max, and all of a sudden you got a lot of questions. I mean, it's interesting, right? I mean, it's an interesting question.
It is, but allow me to throw some water on it. Kyrie is much better than Terry Rozier. Now, you could argue Rozier, his two-way ability and how hard he works on defense. The drop-off isn't as significant as we thought it was going to be.
Okay, let me rephrase then. I think the question is the more interesting question is because I think – the question
I know what you're getting. I know what you're getting to.
If you could have one instead of two. You know, if and turn the other one into something else. The problem is, I don't know that you could work it so that you turn the other one into like max cap space. The money just doesn't quite work.
But I think people forget how good Hayward was. And by the end of last year, was clearly one of the best 20 guys in the league, maybe one of the best 15. But more importantly for me, how well he would have fit in with this team. I looked it up last round. I think Morris and Semi Ojeleye played 39 minutes a game. If you just gave those minutes to Hayward, for me, that's a much bigger upgrade than the drop off from Kyrie to Rozier. As great as Kyrie is, and I think Kyrie is one of the best 9 players in the league, Rozier brings something different that's not as much of a drop off as the drop off from Gordon Hayward to those two guys. And if you put Hayward, Tatum, and Brown out there at the same time, we were talking about the switching.
It's ridiculous.
And you have those guys, but then Hayward now also has the ability to score. And then on top of it, one of those guys is going against the worst defender on the other team. So you have that too. I think the question for me, the Supermax and the mixed, reviews is the wrong word. The mixed, I guess, success of how damaging those contracts are. Blake Griffin, John Wall, even Westbrook. I mean, just to pay anybody $40 million a year in this day and age is crushing. Unless it's LeBron, unless it's maybe Kevin Durant or Giannis or Anthony Davis, I it's really hard to justify, you know? And I just find it hard to believe that this team that is so smart and so careful and so meticulous about how they plan stuff out is going to pay Kyrie Irving $40 million a year. I don't see it happening.
Well, there's the max and there's the super max, right? Like Blake Griffin's a max, but he's a 35% max, so it looks like a suit. Then there's the super max, which they're not going to have to worry about it maybe until Tatum, because even if Kyrie makes the all NBA criteria, he can't get it because you can only get it from the team that drafted you.
The max. Yeah. Supermax only goes to the, so Tatum would be the one that got it.
Tatum, I think, is the one that they will worry about down the line if he makes the all NBA team and all that stuff. But,
so look, Kyrie could get the Blake Griffin max. No, he got the, did he get the Supermax?
No, he didn't. It didn't exist, in its current form.
I'm so confused by all this stuff. All I know is Kyrie can make a lot of money. And also, like, you gotta figure out Horford. There's 2 years left with Horford. Yeah.
Including a player option that will be an interesting decision.
That's another hill that we died on that now we planted our flag. Al Horford hill.
I wrote the big Al Horford profile 5 years ago. Average Al Horford, you know? Average Al. Al Horford's been a top 5 player in the NBA in the playoffs this season. We are now on defense number 2 that his pick and pop 3-pointer is just ruining. It ruined Philadelphia to the point that they were like, Joel Embiid, you are maybe the runner up for defensive player of the year. You gotta hide somewhere else, man. You gotta get you out of here.
Right.
Kevin Love just, no clue. It just, so, Al Horford sets the screen, pops for 3, open 3-pointer. Oh God, we have to do something else because Kevin Love is not going to be able to get out in time. A minute later, same play. Kevin Love gets out a little earlier. Al Horford pump fake, drive. Kevin Love sort of splatters out of the way. Al Horford and one floater in the lane. Okay. Well, that's not working. Okay. Kevin, you keep dropping back and trying to recover, but we're going to send a third guy flying at Al Horford so he can't shoot a 3. Okay, what happens? Al Horford passes to that guy's guy, Jaylen Brown, open 3. Next possession, fake pass to Jaylen Brown, fools right. Everybody on the floor. He drives in for a layup. Oh, crap, that's not working. Do we have to hard hedge on Al Horford now? I don't even know. And then they started doing that, and the defense just completely collapsed in on itself. And this is why we're talking about should they play Tristan Thompson, because Tristan Thompson actually has a shot to either stay with Al Horford, switch onto whoever sets us, goes around on Al Horford. But Al Horford is ruining defenses just with the threat of his 3-point shooting and his driving. And you mentioned stats and small sample sizes. You want me to give you a good stat?
Yeah.
Al Horford. In the playoffs, points per possession on post-ups, 1.319. That's all Celtics possessions. Points per possession when he either shoots out of the post or passes to a guy who shoots one pass away, 1.364. You know where that last number would have ranked in the regular season out of all post-up players who did a minimum number of post-ups? First. The dude is destroying every defense that they throw at him. And I, you know, as you said, it's all the people who talk about, oh, well, 15 points and rebounds, Al Horford.
So okay, stupid.
This is what he does. He's ruining – here's your base defense. 6 minutes into the game, Cleveland is like, oh, God, our base defense doesn't work. Let's try something else. Oh, well, God, he has a counter for literally all of those things.
You left out the thing that he did in the Philly series and then in the Cleveland series too. Philly, Embiid, who we both enjoy and appreciate, not always somebody who runs back hard on defense. LeBron James openly admits, you know, he looks for spots during a game to conserve defense, and the Celtics are like, oh, okay. And Horford's getting these rebounds and just going full blast out. This is something he was doing during his Celtics career, but I don't remember him doing it as devastatingly as this, where the Celtics are just flying now. And if he's getting a rebound, especially on the missed threes or long rebounds or whatever, they're just off. And his ability to make the right decisions on fast breaks as a center, there's just not a lot of guys who can do it. It's like Draymond Green. I'm trying to think of guys in NBA history. I just can't remember somebody who could play the five, but then also run a fast break and make the right decisions. It's crazy. And then you mentioned the post-ups. I remember texting Haralabob about this last series, our friend Haralabob Vulgaris. I couldn't tell whether it was a hot streak or whether he's just gone to another level as a player. But starting with the Milwaukee series, then all the way to Philly, it was just like he was kind of automatic on the low post. He was never this good consistently. And now we're talking like this is a 4-week stretch where he's just like botting people down and these little jump hooks, and he's just great at it. And this is not something that was happening consistently in the first two regular seasons anyway.
Listeners, you know that I prize anything that can save me time and make my life easier. And SeatGeek has done that for buying tickets, which used to be this overwhelming enterprise. Oh my God, there's 600 secondary market websites. Have I searched all of them? How do I know if I'm really getting a good deal? Am I secretly getting ripped off? Did I overlook a good deal hiding somewhere else? SeatGeek simplifies all that. It's the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to anything. An NBA playoff game, the finals are coming up soon. Any other sporting event, a comedy show, a Broadway show. They helped me get tickets to Hamilton, a concert, anything. The app searches and collates all the entire secondary market into one place, so you don't have to worry about, oh, I didn't check here, I didn't check there. It has an easy to use color code system where you know a green dot means a good deal, a red dot means a less good deal. You can check the location of the seat, the normal price of the seat, all of that stuff. It grades every ticket. Every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. And best of all, my listeners, as you surely know by now, get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. All you have to do is download the SeatGeek app. That's easy enough. Enter promo code LOWE, L-O-W-E, my last name, the name of this podcast. Very short last name, actually. That's promo code LOWE, L-O-W-E, $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. So I wrote something when they were on their 16-game winning streak after they beat the Warriors, I think, maybe.
Yeah.
It was in my 10 things. And it was something like Al Horford's playing with a little swagger this year. Like and I think I made a joke about, like, I wonder if Kyrie's got swag. I wonder if it's like rubbing off on Horford, because he just seemed to be like the drives were more aggressive, the pump in drives. The post up was a little more like, I'm just taking it to you. And like, he'd even talk a little trash. I remember writing about, like, I wonder if Kyrie's rubbing off on him. And I think it lasted the whole year, and like, he's just playing with a different level of like effort. Like, I'm better than you, and I'm gonna volleyball spike your shot three or four times in this series. Kevin Love, I am rolling over you in the post. I am hitting you until you don't hit me back anymore. And like, I think all year he's been playing with a new level of like, just effort, I'm going for it, that I haven't seen from him, and this is it.
I almost voted for him for third team all NBA and I didn't want to take shit. And I do, like, ever since I voted, I gave, I think, KG my vote in 2008 for MVP, and it was the wrong vote. And I admit it was the wrong vote. It should have been Chris Paul, I think, in retrospect.
That was your Kobe one, right?
It was Kobe should not have won that year. Kobe should have won in 06. But ever since then, I've been really careful about not overrating. When you watch a team all the time, you just start to overrate everybody on the team. And I've been really careful not to do that. But I really wish I had voted Horford for third team, because I felt like he was the most valuable Celtic the whole season. Kyrie was getting MVP buzz the first 30 games. But the stuff Horford can do as the five and all the flexibility he gives you on both ends, combined with the fact that he's one of the greatest teammates I think the Celtics have ever had. Like, that guy is just a legendary, awesome guy and a good veteran and looks out for everybody. I thought one of the things you had in your piece about the Celts that I had never heard that I thought was fascinating, and I was really surprised Stevens admitted this, was that he doesn't allow rookie hazing, that he wants all the rookies to feel as empowered as anyone else on the team. I thought that was one of the smartest kind of decisions I've ever heard from a coach. It's really, like, especially when you see how they're relying on the rookies now, and you think, like, rookies are just treated like dickheads and they had to carry suitcases and they're just kind of looked down on. And this is, you know, maybe that's part of the reason Tatum has been so empowered in this playoffs. I just thought that was a really interesting tidbit.
I don't think he was happy that I knew and I asked him about it. Let's put it that way. In part because he just doesn't want anything to be about him ever. Like, just yeah. Doesn't want anything. Doesn't want to be the subject of a story. Gives all the credit to the players. Doesn't want to be. And part of that is because I think there's probably part of him that, you know, is still thinks he can get a lot better as a coach and thinks this is all the fawning he gets is a little overblown because he maybe isn't as good as he thinks he's maybe not as good as people think he is.
I think he knew the last couple of years there was a lot of gimmicks with what they were doing. And last year they should have lost to the Wizards in round two, but they had guys out there that I just didn't think were that good. Like, I just didn't think Jay Crowder was that good. Isaiah was a sieve defensively. They could never really get stops when they needed it. They fought like hell. They overachieved. And then you play a team like the Cavaliers and you could see the gap. And I think this year is the first kind of perfect kind of Brad Stevens roster for him. But I tweeted yesterday about the 2013-14 team. And this is only 4 years ago. The best two guys in the team were Jeff Green and Avery Bradley. It was the team with, like, Chris Humphreys and Jared Sullinger. I can't remember a transformation like this with a roster, other than you'd have to go back to the 80s and stuff like Bird, McHale, and Parrish within 2 years all on the same team and stuff like that. But when you really think about, like, 4 years ago, here was the roster, and now here's the roster in 2018. And then on top of it, and this is a point that you and I have discussed. I can't remember if we talked about it on a podcast, but, you know, the two teams that really prioritize finding interchangeable 6'7", 6'8", 6'9", wings who could score and play and switch on defense were the Warriors and the Celtics. And both of them knew what the other was doing, and it was like they had this advanced intel in the league about 2 years ahead of everybody else that actually Jaylen Brown is the type of guy you want. You don't want the Jamal Murray type, even though I like Jamal Murray, but you need the Jaylen Brown and you need the Jason Tatum and you know, you go get Hayward, and the Warriors and the Celtics are the only teams thinking this way. And now it's like, now everybody's thinking this way, but they got the 3-year head start, right?
And it's not only that, it's just, you know, and this is, we thought about this before, like Danny just loves tough, smart guys who are going to play hard and show up. And I wrote this, like, every playoff team, even the ones that are still alive, have guys who are, you're like, man, I wonder if they're going to show up. Like, is Serge Ibaka going to show up? Is Rodney Hood going to show up? No. Is, like, you know, just go down the line. Like, is even Golden State, like, is Andre Iguodala going to chicken out shooting threes today? Like, the Celtics, everybody shows up and plays so hard and so well connected, and they're big, and, like, part of their yesterday reminded me of the Pacers series only in the sense of everyone is trying to figure out the mystery of, like, wow, like, Cleveland played Love at the five and all shooting around LeBron, and they couldn't really score. And we've never seen that before. And I it happened, and then it didn't happen against Toronto because they just fell all into the Toronto pit of despair that they fall into every year in the playoffs.
That was unbelievable. Oh, my God.
And then it happened again yesterday. And I think part of it is Boston, like Indiana, but with even better defensive talent, just plays really, really hard, and they're really, really long, and they don't up. So, like, right. Here's an example. I just watched this play again, and I have it up. With, like, 9 minutes left, 9:30 left in the fourth quarter, Terry Rozier. By the way, my dad's name is Terry. I absolutely love that Terry Rozier is bringing Terry back. People aren't named Terry anymore.
No.
Gets switched onto LeBron after a George Hill LeBron pick and roll, which is probably their best offense that they have right now. and LeBron posts. Here comes Jaylen Brown helping early off Kyle Korver in the corner. You're not supposed to do that. You're not supposed to do that. But he does it, one, knowing if I do it, I'm selling out. I'm going to jump. I'm going to get a hand on his pass. I'm going to just do it better than anyone else in my position will do it. And number two, I know that Marcus Morris behind me is going to be rotating from the top of the arc to Kyle Korver in the corner, and that someone behind Marcus Morris is going to be rotating to his guy, and we're not going to screw this up. And just, they're just better at that kind of stuff than almost every team in the league. They're just, they're bigger, they're better, they play harder, they show up on every possession, and it's just, it's really fun to watch, frankly.
The case for them would be the 04 Pistons. If you're really going to be like, wow, could this team make the finals and maybe even give the Warriors something? We never believed in that 04 Pistons team the entire time. I remember after game two, I think they lost game one and then they swept the next four. So there was something in game two where we just started gambling on the Pistons after that, where it's like, wow, this team defensively is kind of ludicrous, and that this is, and the Lakers can only do this or this, and they were missing Karl Malone at that point. They didn't have the lineup flexibility. They were bringing in guys like Slava and people like that that just weren't kind of ready for it. And I think this is the flaw of the team that the Cleveland has now, which is crazy because I think they have the second highest payroll in the league. They don't really have the options. It's not like there's like all these different looks they can play, right? They're basically down to six guys. So it's like, if they're going to win this series, they need to get an incredible pro LeBron referee crew in like game two or game five, which might happen. Tony Brothers, by the way, the Celtics are 0-8 in the last eight playoff games. Tony Brothers is, we might see him in game two.
Well, LeBron in game two is a monster.
LeBron in game two is a monster. So you get the monster LeBron performance. You get some threes, right? And then Tristan Thompson with 18 rebounds. That's the recipe for them to win. But they need all three of those things to happen, I think, to win in Boston. Because I think the crowd has been worth 10 points a game for the Celtics team. The crowd is like all-time crazy, locked in. It's the perfect marriage of like athletes who are really intense dudes and just a crowd that loves basketball. But that's the recipe. And they, and by the way, very doable recipe for them. Hit 15 threes, 12 threes, whatever. LeBron puts up his 37, 10, 12 and gets to the line 19 times, and Thompson gets a bunch of rebounds to save possessions, and they could absolutely win in Boston. I do not think this series is over by any means. I think it's the highest degree of difficulty he's had since the 2015 finals.
It's not over, and I was going to spend the last few minutes here talking about more adjustments the Cavs can make, but, everything that you and I just said about how Cleveland's offense looked against Indiana and now against Boston, and I thought a lot about this leading up to Game 7 against the Pacers, because if Cleveland had lost that game, a lot of us were going to have to write some sort of Cavaliers obituary, you know, like what happens now, where did they lose their way, how screwed are they if LeBron leaves, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I think what we're all talking around is like, when they face a good defensive team, really good one that can switch a lot, do a lot of stuff, that's when you really feel like, oh, Kyrie's not here. That's when they just don't have the second guy who can break you down and just create something out of nothing. And that I think is just what we're talking around is like, Kyrie's not here. The trade didn't work out. Isaiah's gone. And the guys they got for him are all just secondary guys who can run around and as LeBron does stuff. But like when the LeBron doing stuff isn't quite enough on a possession by possession basis every single time, that's when you just miss that they just don't have a gear. They don't have a verve. They don't have the second guy. And I think that's what we're talking about.
Well, I think that trade is, I thought it was a disaster. I just couldn't believe that people thought Cleveland won that trade. It never made sense to me at the time. I couldn't believe how badly people were underrating Kyrie. Now maybe Kyrie's hurt now and it doesn't matter anyway, even if they had kept him. But, you know, you have LeBron, who I did on my podcast on Friday. I admit now that he's the second best player of all time. I had to put him ahead of Russell. Just these 15 years.
You and House. House isn't there yet with you. Well, House is not. He's there for two. Yeah, he's not there ready for the MJ.
I'm not either. I'm not ready for it either. But I think the 15 years he's had, and the durability and the consistency is just off the charts. You can't calculate it anymore. But the fact that they threw away one of these, we don't know how many more years LeBron has. I mean, we think it's now it's like the ceiling has been removed. And if you told me he's going to play 20, he's going to have a 20-year career where he's at his peak basically for 15 of those years, I wouldn't not believe it. But he, you know, how many more years does he have where he can realistically win the title? And they took this huge gamble on Isaiah's hip and were hoping it was going to be ready in time. And it was clearly like, if Danny Ainge is trying to trade you this guy with the injured hip, that should be a red flag. They get this lottery pick back that unless they traded it wasn't going to help them, and they didn't trade it. And I think that's going to be the legacy of this team, because even if they get by the Celtics, they're not coming close to the Warriors or the Rockets. I think those teams will absolutely destroy them offensively. But they basically threw away a vintage LeBron year, that we don't know how many he's going to have left. And at some point in this series, if the Celtics can win game two and they can really throw the kitchen sink at them in game three and put them on their heels, I think LeBron will hit a point where he just goes, God, this sucks. I can't believe it. I can't believe one of my vintage seasons is going down the drain. And we've seen how he reacts in those situations. It's usually not good.
If you travel a lot, you're definitely familiar with the situation where you realize you have not booked a hotel for tomorrow night, two nights from now. And you go online and you're like, oh my God, everything costs a gazillion dollars. I'm going to have to stay at a flea bag. But that's not necessarily the case. And Hotel Tonight is an app that's here to help you discover that that's not necessarily the case. There are lots of really good hotels that are not sold out for tomorrow. And if you know where to look, you can get a really good deal at those hotels. And Hotel Tonight searches all of that and does it for you. They've got profiles of each hotel with a fun summary of all the info you need, pictures of what the rooms look like. Go and explore. You can get a good room at a cool hotel in 30 seconds. And it's not just for the short-term stuff that I'm talking about. You can book your regular vacation via Hotel Tonight. So download the Hotel Tonight app and start looking around. So let's not get ahead of ourselves then. Let's talk about game two for 5 minutes. And
over-under free throws for LeBron.
Oh, stop.
17?
Oh, stop.
18? 24?
Okay. You know, we'll see.
Think about, like, we talked about that Indiana series. So Indiana, in crunch time, had Collison, Oladipo, and Bogdanovich out there. And Bogdanovich was, like, weirdly competent defensively, even though he's not great. But they always had two small guys. In other words, Cleveland could always get the right kind of matchup when they wanted it. And in this Boston series, they can't, combined with the fact that Boston's running all the time. And LeBron, I just don't think he's going to have the same tank in these games. And they're going to be bodying him. They're going to be banging him. And I don't think, would you agree with this? It's not realistic for him to do what he did in those last four Indiana games or in the Toronto series in this series. I don't think he can get to 85% of it, because I think it's just going to be too taxing of a series for him. What do you think?
Well, I mean, even in the Indiana series, as I've said before, he waited until game seven when it was do or die to start getting to the rim on post-ups, which I, watching the series, I think a lot of us thought, well, I don't understand, he can do this anytime he wants. Like, Lance Stephenson can't guard him in the post. It should be a layup or a three or a foul. And I think that suggests, like, he's conserving his energy. Now, as we get further in the playoffs, maybe he has to do that less, but he's just one guy. You know, he's still just one guy. He's the best and he's unbreakable, but his energy conservation suggests that there is still a finite on any game night. I mean, remember he tried to play the whole game in game seven and couldn't do it and cramped up. Like, it's just because there's just a finite level of resources.
And he's going to have to guard somebody in this series. So it's not like you can't just let him take possessions off. I thought the Windhorse piece about how slow LeBron moves during the games was one of the most fascinating pieces I've read in a couple of years, just because I couldn't figure out why he seemed to have, even in year 15, the kind of stamina that he has. And then you read that and you go, oh, because he's doing everything differently. You know, every decision he's making is – it's almost like watching somebody who has 30 miles left in their gas tank and has 40 miles to go and is like turning the car off at stoplights to not run gas. That's kind of what he's doing during basketball games. And I don't think the Celtics are going to let him do that. I think they're adamant about making him run, making him guard people, putting him in positions where he has to exert energy. He looked, it was a weird game for him yesterday. We've seen him have weird games before, but he did look out of sorts. And I do wonder if it was the pace of the game and what they were doing that affected him a little bit.
If I'm Ty Lue, I'm not changing my lineup yet. I'm not starting Tristan Thompson yet. I'm going to stick with this Lovett center lineup for at least one more game. I'm going to play Tristan more if I have to, but I'm going to milk these Rozier actions, which I thought, you know, they missed two open threes in the first quarter. One was a Love three and one was a JR three, where they ran Hill LeBron pick and rolls, or one, I don't remember who the ball handler was, who the screener was. I believe George Hill was the ball handler because you can't go under on him. It's a hard play. They switched. And LeBron had Rozier on him, and they did the switch you described earlier where they tried to rescue Rozier. And for all the pub they're getting about they did that switch, on those two occasions they completely screwed it up, and Love was wide open because Al Horford left him to do that switch. And then they screwed it up again and panicked and ran out toward Love, who passed it to JR. Like, I'm milking that George Hill-LeBron two-man game and the George Hill-Love two-man game even more. And I'm getting into my offense a little earlier because the Cavs want to play mismatch ball, but one of the problems that you have doing that is when you get into your offense with 10 on the shot clock, you just don't have time. Like, by the time you get the mismatch, there's no option left. You have to there's just not enough time to sort of scan the floor. And I'm doing all that more. And the Celtics trump card, which they finally, not trump card, but their obvious counter, which they finally did in the second half for a couple possessions, was to get Rozier off George Hill and put him on JR. And we've seen the Warriors obviously do that with Curry all the time. And the difference is that the Celtics are even bigger. And then the Cleveland has to decide, can we use JR in these two-man actions? Will that work well enough? I think that's the chess match I'm trying if I'm Ty Lue before I really, really pivot.
I love how you're thinking. I agree 100%. And I would even throw in this. Because Stevens does this. He'll do the one thing the one game. And they're not just going to be like, all right, same thing for game two. Let's run it back. Like, he's already planning on what's Cleveland going to do to counter this.
It's a great point that people miss in predicting these adjustments. Is like, it's just like, even those of us who try to watch this game with a sophisticated eye are all going to be a step behind all the time because we're reacting to what happened, whereas they're already thinking about the next thing.
Well, Stevens is going to go into game two and he's going to say, all right, here's what Cleveland's going to do. They know that the George Hill Rozier thing is in their favor. They know they need more from George Hill. They know they need a second shot creator because we're throwing so many people at LeBron that they're going to need something else to get going. The George Hill Kevin Love pick and roll, George Hill posting up. Like, they're going to try to get George Hill going in this game. All right, so what do? All right, let's put a bigger dude on George Hill. Let's bring Marcus in 2 minutes earlier than we normally bring him in and just tell Marcus, like, George Hill isn't scoring anymore. And they're just going to try to take him out and put as much pressure on LeBron as they can. If you noticed in the second half yesterday, there was this play. Rodney Hood had the ball. Marcus Smart was on him. And it was clear Stevens told him at halftime, Marcus, if Rodney Hood scores again, I'm going to be very disappointed in you as a human being. And Marcus was like, Rodney Hood had this ball. Marcus was like, basically inside his uniform, it was just like, you are not doing anything the rest of this half. And I feel like that's what they're going to have to do with George Hill. And by the way, you know, if you're the Cavs and that's your big adjustment for game two, that's not great. If it's like, hey man, we need more from George Hill, I would play Osman. That's the guy I'm kind of scared of as the Celtics, cause he's this fluky, I don't know what the hell he is. I know he's not good on defense, but he's kind of an irrational confidence guy in a way that Clarkson is an irrational confidence guy, but I want him to shoot every time. Osman kind of scares me.
I'd certainly rather have him play next to LeBron than Clarkson. Clarkson playing next to LeBron to me serves no purpose. Part of the reason I'm sticking with my lineup is also like I just think Kevin Love has to be better defensively in game two. Like, Al Horford is not Dirk Nowitzki. Like, you should be able to cut off a ball handler and recover to Al Horford and make him make that drive and then offer up some resistance instead of just rolling over in the paint. So I think he can be a little better. So that's part of my thing for
We talking about two what ifs. You mentioned with the Celtics how we talked about how lucky they were that nobody took the Justice Winslow trade, right? So you had, I think the Knicks passed on it. I know the Pistons passed on it. Whatever it was, like 8, 9, 10, it was Pistons passed. They offered the same thing. They wouldn't even talk about it because they wanted to take Stanley Johnson. The ninth pick was Charlotte. Jordan couldn't figure it out in time and finally didn't do it. So they passed on those four picks, one of which would have been Jaylen Brown. Another one would have been Rozier. And then the 10th pick, they called Riley, and Riley just laughed and hung up on him. So that was.
I didn't know that. That's
yeah. Riley's like, no, I'm taking Justice Winslow. I'll talk to you guys later. So that happened. So that was that year. And then the next year, if Draymond doesn't punch LeBron in the balls, guess who's on the Celtics right now? Kevin Love.
Yeah.
Because Golden State wins. Kevin Love's the scapegoat. They have that lottery pick and they wanted to get somebody good. And I think Kevin Love is on the Celtics. And, you know, that's the all time great sliding doors moment of this decade other than the Harden trade is that crazy Klay Thompson game. The Klay Thompson game and then the Draymond game, those two things together altered the course of like how many franchises? 8? 10?
I know it's crazy. I'm just glad that an hour in we got a Harden trade reference.
Well, look,
you got to say no. It's. I think tradition dictates that should be referenced anytime we do a podcast together. Someone has to bring it up.
Listen, if you made a list of this century, what you wanted to be on the right side of history on, and there's really about, I don't know, 13 to 15 NBA transactions or moments or whatever, and I think the Harden trade is one of them. I think Westbrook winning the MVP last year is another, which we've both taken our victory laps about. Steph Curry getting passed on twice by Minnesota. There's some of these moves. I've been on the wrong side of history. I thought Orlando should have taken Emeka Okafor over Dwight Howard. I've had some losses over the years. But you know, Anthony Bennett, I listened to the Woj pod the other day where they were talking about if Cleveland hadn't taken Anthony Bennett, Woj thought he would have fallen out of the lottery. I'd never heard that before. What a misfire that was. Oh, my God.
It's funny because I told you I spent a lot of that weekend before Game 7 of Pacers-Cavs sort of talking to my favorite smart people around the league about, you know, like about what the Cavs had done to get to this moment of being in such jeopardy if LeBron leaves. And the smartest among them, a couple of them said, you know, people forget about Anthony Bennett. Like, yeah. It's just been forgotten because so much stuff has happened since then. Like, that is unrecoverable. Getting literally zero out of the number one pick is just, think of all of the things that could be today. And you could say to me, well, they traded him for Kevin Love. He was salary filler even then. Yeah. He was not an asset. He was just salary filler. Like, that is almost patient zero of a lot of the roster problems Cleveland is going to have if LeBron leaves. So it's good. I'm glad you brought that up. I'm also glad you brought up the Harden trade because Danny Ainge is not going to make that mistake. And by that, I mean he and the Celtics ownership, which is going to be willing to pay the tax, I think, when all these bills start coming due, they are not going to preemptively trade any of these young guys to duck the tax and or just sort of before they have gotten enough information to make a decision about who should come back and who shouldn't. Like there will not be an equivalent trade among this Celtics group. I would be shocked if there ever were.
The only way they would do it is if they just felt like somebody was overpriced and wanted to get off them. And they just decided like Kyrie's not worth $35 million a year. The Anthony Bennett draft, I did that draft and was really, you know, we were talking to everybody and trying to figure out what was happening. And we did get the intel that Bennett was dropping. And that was why if you watch on YouTube, I do the whoa. They took Anthony Bennett and you hear me in the background because they, for some reason, left my mic on. I was like, whoa, because we thought he was going to drop to like the 8th pick. And I thought they should have taken Oladipo. And that was what I had said on the draft preview before. And I just thought he was the safest pick. In retrospect, Giannis going 15, even though there's a million reasons that happened. And Gobert went 27 and McCollum went 10. That was just a crazy draft.
Crazy draft.
But they didn't take Oladipo because they already had Deion Waiters and Kyrie. And they weren't thinking about it correctly. And this is what we were talking about in the draft. I was like, take Oladipo, make Deion Waiters your sixth man. That's what he is anyway. He's not a starter. But yeah, that's to just whiff on it. And that's why with this Philly thing with Fultz, I think Fultz is going to be, I would certainly not write him off.
No, I'm rooting for him and he's shown explosive talent. It just, I hopefully this summer is a big summer for him mentally and with his jump shot.
Would you have played him in this series?
I would not have.
You wouldn't have played him in a home game?
I thought he looked too out of control and too, given everything that's happened there, I just feel like it's almost cleaner to say, let's not expose him to the possibility of really heavy spotlight failure and just sort of start again next year.
Before we go, what team is Kawhi on next year?
Oh, boy.
You had to guess.
If I had to guess, I lie, you're putting me on the spot on my own.
You podcast. Have to guess. At least for the blog post that somebody right now, like, Zach Lowe thinks Kawhi is going to be on the Clippers.
No matter what you say, they'll still write the blog post.
They'll still write the blog post.
You can be like, I'm literally pulling this idea out of my ass. I haven't talked to a human being in 10 weeks.
They won't put that in the blog post.
No, just be like, if I had to guess, I would guess one of the Los Angeles teams.
Me too. I would have the Clippers.
Should I make clear? I don't feel great about that guess. It very well could be the Spurs. I have a lot of faith in the Spurs. Blah, blah. I feel like I need to qualify this 9,000 times now.
I would bet on the Clippers.
You made me guess.
I would bet on the Clippers, Lakers second choice, Sixers third choice. Could you see a scenario where there is no Kawhi and no Greg Popovich on the Spurs next year?
That would shock me only because Pop is coaching the Olympics. And everyone has said to me, I think he'll coach the Spurs at least through. I mean, I don't know. Everyone has speculated to me, right, that I think he'll coach the Spurs at least through then. But it's possible he wouldn't, right? I mean, so.
Is there a better trade on the table for the Spurs than Markelle Fultz, Robert Covington, the 10th pick, and one of those Euro guys they stashed for Kawhi Leonard? Nobody's topping that, right?
Well, it depends if Brandon Ingram gets involved and you know, whatever else the Lakers can throw into that.
Brandon Ingram and Luol Deng?
Well, Luol Deng's still on the team. You know, the Celtics can beat it. The problem is Tatum has gotten too good and Brown has almost gotten too good. Like, guys, you keep reading these proposals, like Tatum plus the first round pick plus, no. Tatum for Kawhi straight up. I wrote this last week. If the Celtics got 100% assurance that Kawhi were healthy, and 100% assurance that he was re-signing, only then would they think about it. And they still might not do it.
No, Zach,
straight up.
No, Zach, stop. Tatum is untouchable. He's untouchable.
Yeah, you know it could be that simple now. You're right, it could be that simple now.
There's three guys in the league you would have the conversation for: Giannis, Anthony Davis, and God. Those are the three. That's it.
Okay.
Wait a second though. The Lakers call OKC and they're like, look, you guys are screwed. You're not winning the title with Westbrook. Come on. We'll trade you Lonzo and Luol Deng's contract right now. We'll take Westbrook off your hands. Paul George will leave and you can start the rebuild. What does OKC do?
They say no, but they secretly think about it harder than they would ever let on.
They have a way longer meeting than maybe OKC fans would guess, right?
I don't think it's that long. Like, I still think it's a pretty hard no, but there's at least, and I don't know who it is, but there's at least one person in the front office who's pro, who when they raise all the hands or someone raises their hand and says, I think we should do it. But that they would not do that.
I think this summer has the most potential for a crazy trade that we've had any summer this decade. I could see a jaw-dropping. Yeah, but over under on crazy trades is 1.5.
Over. I'm going over. This summer is going to be absolutely crazy. It's going to be, I'm trying to prep my family for it. Like, the season's going to end. The draft is going to be X days away and free agency is going to take forever because of LeBron. And like, there's going to be 9,000, there's going to be crazy subplots. Like, I don't even get to write about because it's going to be so crazy.
Philly, the Clippers, the Spurs, the Lakers, maybe the Celtics. Who else?
DeMarcus Cousins.
Denver.
The Blazers.
Oh, God. Who would you keep?
What, between the two guards?
Yeah.
Lillard.
Lillard for $10 million more a year. Right?
Well, probably, yeah.
See, I think McCollum is my favorite random trade piece that is actually probably out there this summer. I would love to see him, you know, really, if the Sixers... And Fultz doesn't make sense for the Blazers, but if the Sixers wanted to add somebody stealth who could really thrive with Simmons and Embiid, I think McCollum is way up there.
Pistons, another team trying to who may try to do something crazy. Charlotte, what is Charlotte's path out of this hellish 5 to 10 year outlook that they're looking at is to try and do crazy things. And stuff we don't even see coming is going to happen. Dallas, what is Dallas going to try to do?
I like where Dallas, I think, has the most lottery karma heading into the lottery tomorrow night. They won the title. They really desperately tried to spend money to stay relevant and try to contend, even though it was completely idiotic. And this was the first year that they actually embraced the tanking, and Carlisle hated it so much that I think he just probably started chain smoking cigarettes and drinking bourbon at night. He's just fundamentally against tanking.
I hate to point out some other things that maybe are going to hurt their karma with the lottery guards
I didn't think of that.
Care
oh
about
yeah.
Some
oh,
other stuff.
Great point. I'm out. I rescind the statement. Yeah. I rescind it. Right. That's a really good point.
Enabling a culture of toxic sexual harassment. The lottery should take that into effect.
Yeah, that's my bad. The Detroit thing, I was mad at you that you, Stan Van Gundy, that was a Hail Mary. You can say whatever you want about that trade, but that is a trade we've seen over and over again. When the guy who's on his way out, you do the Hail Mary for the superstar and hope it works.
To do it. I'm just saying everybody there wanted to do it. Ownership was like Stan Van Gundy in February it's not as if the powers that be there, whether it's Arne Tellem or Tom Gores or whoever you want to say, it's not as if they did not know that Stan Van Gundy not being on the team the following year was a possibility when they greenlit that trade. Everybody was on board with that trade.
With the Clips, so they have 12 and 13. They have movable contracts, and I think that trade could be remembered as one of the better ones of this decade, if they can figure out a new plan and put it in place. Cause, you know, Blake is somebody that I thought was the third best player in the league at the end of the 2015 playoffs. I really did. And, you know, you just hit an injury point. And once you pass that point, it's just hard. And he has not been that guy in 3 years now. You know, we would not, should we form a consulting committee for these teams?
Well, like, you know,
stealth committee.
You know my idea for the biggest scam in sports. If you want to get in on it, you can join me in Windhorse. We want to start one of these search firms that teams pay when they're hiring a GM and a coach. Oh,
that's great. I'm in.
That teams pay like enormous six figure sums of money, and all they do is like Google, like, oh, these are the best assistant GMs in the league. Here's your list of potential GMs. Like, I'm going to do that, undercut the price that the current ones do, and just like do two teams a year. We'll buy into my scam, and then I'll be set. I don't have to do any work for the rest of the year.
I have a lot of thoughts on that. And I would, by the way, that on the Knicks, you mentioned the Hornets and how what a crap situation they're in. I asked Jason Concepcion, your friend, diehard Knicks fan, traumatized at this point, what franchise he wouldn't want to switch places with. So you can either keep the Knicks or you can switch places with another franchise. Which one would you not want to do?
Okay.
And the only one that the only ones were Brooklyn. Wouldn't want to switch places with them.
Arguable. Well, I guess with Porzingis, it's not really arguable.
Who might be out for all of next year. And then Charlotte was the other one. And maybe Detroit.
Orlando?
Yeah, Orlando's got a lottery pick, and they have, you know, salary cap space potentially and some stuff, right?
Okay.
So, but yeah, that Charlotte situation, those salaries, you go on SpotTrack or whatever that site's called, you look at the Charlotte salaries, it's like, oh my God, what's happened? Nick Batum's going to be making $26 million. And by the way, I thought Nick Batum was the one I would have traded for if I was the Cavs over these. If they're going to take bad contracts anyway, at least get somebody who can switch on defense.
Can I clarify two things before we go?
Yeah, please. By the way, we should mention you're coming on mine next Monday.
Of course.
Yeah.
Number one, I mentioned your behavior at the Sixers game and did not clarify what I meant, and I don't want people.
Yeah, what was that? Tell me what my behavior was.
We hobnobbed before the game. As one does, and said, you know what? After the game, let's go grab a beer. Let's go get something to eat. And I get this text from you. It's about 2 minutes left in the game. I'm too angry. I have to get out of here. I have to leave the arena. I'm too angry. Maybe
it was a minute left.
The game. Okay. I was disappointed. Now I had to do a lot of work, so maybe it wouldn't have worked out anyway. But you were angry. You felt it. You felt the pain of that loss.
Well, I also,
and the officiating.
I was throwing a one hitter with the Philly crowd. The Philly crowd was very nice to me, and only one time during the game did somebody scream, "Hey Simmons!" And I turned, and it was a Sixer fan who held up both middle fingers like, "F you." And I was like, you know, after the Celtics lose this, I might have a few more of those people in my life, and I'm 48 years old, and I should just leave. And, so I did. It was more because I was mad, and it was like, if somebody had done that again, I might have reacted badly. It's time for me to go.
Yeah. You exited. It's like when I leave, it's like the Irish exit I do from parties. It's just, I'm out. Like there's
I was upset about the officiating. Which I shouldn't get, but the 12-1 second quarter foul discrepancy with Scott Foster and Tony Brothers, and I was just like, I was just so infuriated by how the game was being called that that was part of it too. So
the other thing I wanted to clarify was, speaking of Jason Concepcion, he and Mallory Rubin came on The Jump, hosted by Rachel Nichols, and presented me with my long-awaited Grantland hoodie, which I was excited to receive. Even as they presented it to me, I was excited to receive it on television. It was a big show. Big show was made of this. We're bringing the Grantland hoodie. I held up the Grantland hoodie, and as I'm holding it up on TV to show the cameras, I think, this looks a little small. Something's not right here. You know what they gave me? They gave me the Grantland hoodie that Jason's corgi sleeps on as a blanket just for the purposes of faking television viewers into believing that I had received my Grantland hoodie. So I wanted to clarify that too. I still don't have it. And they faked out the public with a dog blanket. There was hair on it.
You know, we were thinking about making a Zach Lowe mannequin, like how they made the Sammy Sweetheart mannequin in the Jersey Shore reunion, a reference that you're not going to get. And putting the Grantland hoodie on that and just putting it in our studio. It's just the Zach Lowe mannequin with the Grantland hoodie, but you actually don't have the Grantland hoodie. I mean, there's only like 40 left and people are losing them now and asking me for more. And the person who made them, a Nike, doesn't work there anymore. And it really is the all time collector item. I don't know what to tell you.
I contribute a lot of good hours to Grantland.com.
It's you're a large, right?
Yeah.
I need to go in the attic and see if there's any in my attic.
It had dog hair on it. So that was the line that was, that was disappointing to me that I had to wipe dog hair off of myself.
That's mean. I don't support mean behavior.
I look forward to coming on the podcast on Monday. You always drag me into a place I don't want to be, like predicting Kawhi, but that's healthy. That's healthy. By the way,
I look forward to being blamed after the Celtics lose game two and everybody's like, it's because you and Zach Lowe did that podcast. It seem like the Celtics were going to win. You guys suck.
You know what one of my favorite game two memories ever in the history of the NBA is being in Oakland. The game two of the finals, after Kyrie got hurt in game one, so 2015, where the Cavs somehow win and LeBron touchdown spikes the ball and screams. And I remember looking at that thing and, man, that is a bad Mets player. And like, if they lose game two, that'll be why. Cause they have, cause Cleveland's got that guy. And that guy, when he's down 1-0, is a problem.
We didn't mention, but we didn't mention one subplot that I think is really important for this game too. If the Celtics win, then there's this weird 4-day gap until game three, which will be 4 days of people wondering, are the Cavs dead? Are the Cavs done? Is LeBron gone? And what the hell else are we going to do? There's no game for 4 days. We just have that and the Warriors game. But the way they staggered the schedule this year has been bizarre. And this one's really bizarre. The Celtics have a chance to go up 2-0, but then also have that 4-day kind of media just sticking their thorns into the Cavs, which I think would be a good thing, not a bad thing for the Celtics.
It is a weird schedule. Schedules always get weird this time of year in the playoffs when series end sooner or later than expected, and everyone always has these explanations that aren't true. But it is weird, and it does mean that we will have a night of no games, I think, at some point. I believe it's Thursday, there's no games this week. And so I got a lineup. Maybe
unacceptable. Had to spend time with our families. Like, what the hell? What the hell, NBA?
Put
what
the
about
kid
us?
To bed. Put
yeah,
the kid to bed,
on.
Something like that. Ridiculous. All right, my friend. It's always good to catch up. We'll do this again on your much more popular podcast on Monday. And I always look forward to it.
All right, my pleasure. It was great.
The Low Post is presented by Goodyear. Discover the possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.